Hi, everyone. This is Kevin Van Trump. I'm on the podcast here today by myself. I had some thoughts and some things on my mind that I wanted to share with folks and challenge everybody to kind of dig in and think about it in their own perspective or their own regard. I've been contemplating the ideas, the concepts, the thought for the last 10 years, and I think I've kind of dialed it in to where I would like to help as many people as I can and help them think a little bit differently about their farm or their ag business operation that they're currently have in play. Where I start is I want to kind of take everyone through my daily routine or daily life, in essence, when if I'm out on the road and I have to go speak to a group, whether it's an ag bank group, a board of directors, one of the bigger ag businesses, or even a group of farmers that's at an ag retail location, per se. Generally when I walk in, most of the people, first few questions always out of the gates are, what's going to happen to corn and bean prices? Where are we going to be with cotton, cattle, rice, things of that nature? And where are they going to be, in a shorter term perspective? Generally somewhere in the next month to 12 months. That's what everybody kind of wants to know. Maybe a little bit, maybe out to 18 months. But, where are we going to be at corn? What should we do here and what should we do there? I've thought about it a million times through the years. And as I worked at the Merck, started off trading FX foreign currencies and things, moved over and worked at the Board of Trade and get back here at the Kansas City Board of Trade. When I had come back to Kansas City, I'd always tell people, we were, the majority of us, I'd say 95% of us were traders. We'd focus in on a particular commodity. We would become experts at that commodity, and we really knew the ins and outs and the intricacies of that market on a daily basis, movements, weekly, monthly, spread tendencies, calendar and historical tendencies, things of that nature. And we would focus in. And, like I said, we really wanted to know what was going to happen minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day in that particular commodity because we were traders. And I didn't really know a lot of guys or ladies at the time in Chicago, New York, Kansas, any of the exchanges that I considered longer-term investors. And there's a huge difference between a trader and an investor. And it's – your game plan is massively different if you're a trader than you are an investor. Investors are very long-term oriented. They are very good at getting the big macro pictures right on a long-term perspective. Traders are very narrow, have blinders on, and are trying to play. Most of the time, my friends and most of the bigger traders I knew, we were short-term oriented. Some of us would become swing traders. Some of us, some guys would close positions every night on a day trading basis. A lot of guys would probably intermittent, more swing trader type, or maybe even a little bit longer term out into, hold a position for a month, 2 months, 3 months, something of that nature. But rarely did you see guys build long-term multi-year positions as an investor. So I started to think about it. And every time I go out and talk and everyone I come across, they all approach me like they're traders. And I sit there and I think about my own farm operations, our own farm businesses that we own, and I catch myself doing the exact same thing all the time. I'm constantly sitting there worrying and getting tripped up in the nearby price and nearby movement of this marketing year, and maybe at most a portion of the next marketing year, but generally it's just I am zeroed in, and I would clearly define my psychological characteristics as a trader. But here's where it gets tricky. There's a great quote, and I have it hanging on the wall in one of my offices. The chief cause of failure and unhappiness is trading what you want most long-term for what you want right now. And I start to think back, and I sit here, and I look at all of my poor decision-making that I've made through the years, some of my worst decisions. And most often, I've learned that our decision-making processes – this is where I challenge everyone to think about themselves. Our decision-making processes are geared really to service what we call the urgent. and not really what's the most important. It's the urgent that we service. And what I mean by that is simply this. You know, I should have been paying a lot closer attention to my damn body weight when I was in my 30s and 40s. But I never had high blood pressure, never had high cholesterol or anything like that, so it wasn't urgent. It wasn't something that was urgent. But it definitely is important, and it didn't go away. And so I've learned, as I've gotten older, most of the urgent crap that comes along day to day, I mean, you know, hey, the kid's calling, oh, I can't jump her, my truck won't start, can someone come jump for me, can somebody do this, hey, can somebody, those are urgent things, and, you know, we race to deal with them and race to go put out those fires and race to solve those problems because they're urgent. But yet we take what's important and the most important, and we push them to the side and ignore them and don't want to look at them, really. And we just don't want to focus on that. And I've come to the conclusion that, our thinking models were set up that way early on by our parents and their parents. And, you know, hey, this is how your daddy did it and his daddy did it. We're going to keep our head down. We're going to outwork everybody and don't look up. And, you know, you were called when the fire bell rang, you had to come put the fire out. You responded to everything that was urgent. And damn, we were good at it. We worked our asses off and we made it happen. But we didn't pay a lot of attention to what was important long, long term. And I am definitely, I am to blame for this as much as anybody. It's more of a trader mentality than a longer term great investor. And as I said before, I've seen some of the best, and I got to be friends with some of the best traders there were. And I've watched some of the absolute best traders there ever were go broke, not once, not twice, but I've seen some of them go broke three times, maybe more. I have never seen some of the greatest investors that I've had the chance and opportunity to be around ever go broke. So let me make sure you understand this. The trader mentality is fun, and it's fast-paced, and it's catering to the urgent. The investor mentality is longer, slower-paced, catering to the important. There's two massively different camps there. And I sit here today, and the urgent today is, you know, talking about sub $3 corn prices and sub $8 beans or whatever the price may be at any given time. But the longer term is what it's going to happen with the farm. I sit and I challenge everyone, and I've thought about this a million times. So I've been on some boards. And I've had the chance to work with, like I said, some awesome CEOs through the years, some of the biggest companies in the United States. And you always try and figure out when you're releasing a new product, you're releasing anything new, you know, what's the one common thread that will bring all of your buyers together? You know, what's that one common ingredient? And it doesn't matter if you said, I don't care if you drive red, you drive green, you plant Pioneer, you plant Syngenta, you do whatever. None of that matters. What's the one common thread? You know, you try and figure that out. And for me and my friends, and I'll say 95% of all of my friends, we go out and we work this hard and we've done what we've done because of one common thread, our families. And we want to leave something better for our kids and then their kids. And that's our goal. And I think it was our parents' goal and their parents' goal, and that's been our driving goal. And so I sit there and I think to myself, what's the one most important ingredient? It's the family. And if we can leave this farm to the family in a good position that they can carry on and raise their kids and it provides them an income and a life that we've loved out here in rural America, damn, we've done something. And follow me on this. That is an investor's mindset. That is what an investor would be looking to do. He's looking to be right 30 years out on the horizon, 40 years out, and the most important things that are never going to go away is what he's looking to focus on and make sure he has taken care of. So I'm telling you, we're all investors, but our actions tend to come across and we take and make these psychological moves that are like traders. And we get the shit convoluted and mixed up, and it creates big problems. I mean, what we really, really want the most is to create a legacy out here to create an operation that we can give to our kids and they can give to their kids, and we have put the boat in motion that it's going to sail the right damn direction for our families and their families. But what we're doing is we're putting blinders on, and we're maneuvering here like we're traders. We don't want to look up. We don't want to make changes. We don't want to see what's going on over here. We don't want to pay attention over there. Hey, just tell me what corn price is going to do next 6 months. Hey, just tell me what's going to happen over here with beans and wheat and cotton. What's going to happen with my cattle price? You know, that's the mentality. And, boy, I tell you what, we've got to make a change. And you got to challenge yourselves on this. And, you know, I'm really challenging our family and Jordan Kennedy and Michelle. And, and we sit here and I say, man, we got to be right longer term, 20, 30 years. I don't know how much longer I'm going to live, my wife's going to live, but we got to be right 20 to 30 years out and not be dead right. But, I mean, we got to be in the vicinity. I mean, we got to be able to be in sniffing distance of what it's going to be like 20 to 30 years from now. And we've got to fire shots that direction that helps our kids and their kids and maybe the grandkids through the years. Now, as you guys know, and everybody on this thing knows, I mean, if you get the gun off just slightly when you're out hunting with a rifle, and the bullet, I mean, 100 yards out, it's way off target. So it don't take much. I mean, if we're off slightly back here on our end, 20, 30 years out for Jordan and his kids and Kennedy and her kid, I mean, shit, we'll be way off the map. We won't have helped them at all. We'll be so far off target. So I can't stay zeroed in and honed in like I'm a trader. I have to think like an investor, and I have to come up and surround myself with data, information, things that allow me to be more open-minded about what it's going to be like 30 years from now. And here's where it gets scary to me, and it makes me nervous. I believe we've come to a fork in the road, and I've told some folks this, and some have heard me say it when we're out, when I've been out speaking. But, I mean, I just wanted to let you chew on it and replay it as many times as you need to replay it. For our family, and I know many of my friends, the mantra or the sounding war cry out here from my dad and my grandfather was, hey, we might not be able to outsmart anybody, but I'll tell you right now, we think we can outwork some people. We think we can outwork our neighbors, and we can outwork some other people in this country. So we're going to keep our head down, and we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing, and we're just going to outwork everyone. And shit, I'll tell you what. It worked. It paid pretty big dividends. My grandfather and them came over, and they did a little better for the next generation, and my father and mother did a little bit better for our generation, and Michelle and I are moving the ball a little bit further, hopefully, for the next generation. So, we haven't set any land speed records or anything, but we feel like we've moved the ball a little bit, and each generation has definitely done their part. But we've gotten there in the last three or four generations just by outworking everyone. The like I said, it was just, hey, here's what my daddy did and his daddy did, and this is what we're going to do, and we're going to keep doing it because this is what works, and we're going to outwork everyone. Well, I'm letting you know, that's great. I think to this point, that has been the right play. But I'm going to tell you right now, if we, meaning my generation, we're in our 50s, Michelle and I, if we don't make the tough decision right here and we decide to just keep our head down and just keep doing what we've been doing and keep grinding it, well, my boy or my daughter, Bernie Kate, are going to have to make a tough decision. They're going to have a very, very difficult decision on their hands. And Michelle and I will have put them there. Now, I challenge you all to think back through your family tree. Someone in that family tree, I promise you, had to make one of the toughest decisions that was ever made in your family tree, and that was to head west. And somebody headed west, and somebody homesteaded some ground, and someone decided that they were going to plant corn and beans, or they were going to plant wheat, and they were going to head that direction. And they loaded up the kids, and they loaded up the wagons, and they had to make one of the scariest, most difficult decisions possible. Going into a frontier, a land of unknown, where all possibilities and crazy variables were out there, and to just take and uproot and head west and not have a clue about what the hell you're going to see or what you were going to do, and to make that decision, it did it for the betterment of their kids and for the betterment of their next generation of kids. But they did it. They made the tough decision. I'm sure it wasn't easy. I'm sure they weren't, you know, just living a life of Riley out there. I think it was difficult. And then we gained a footing. And then the footing became, hey, we just repeat and rinse and repeat and rinse and keep outworking people. Well, now all of a sudden, hell, we've become the world's ancillary supplier of wheat. Look what's happened in wheat. We're at 100-year lows in wheat planted acres here in the United States. Because everyone can go and get wheat cheaper through the Black Sea region, through parts of Europe, the European Union, parts of Australia, Argentina, we're no longer the low-cost producer. So we're seeing, you know, we've lost a ton of market share in the export space and other things in that category. We're seeing the same thing. It's not happening yet, and I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight, but we're seeing similar setups and tendencies for corn, soybeans, other things. As technology comes on, it's coming on in a massive wave. And I think technology at one point was our secret sauce here in the United States for farming and agriculture. You know, we just had that secret sauce. Well, now that technology is being exported around the globe. Everyone has access to it. And all of a sudden, people in technology, whether it's seed varieties or, you know, different types of precision planting, whatever it may be, it's allowing crops to be grown on worse soil, not better soil. And it's allowing crops to be grown and produced with better yields than in the past. And you're seeing this technology now start to go into other parts of the world that have cheaper land prices, cheaper labor prices, cheaper input costs into some essence. And that's allowing them to be more competitive in a commoditized market than we are. And so, you know, like my friends and I talk, we've traded everything from cotton, cocoa, sugar, coffee, any market you want to talk about, we've probably traded. And there's one golden rule. When a market deems that it's oversupplied, like let's say corn right now, there's a lot of people talking that we're going to be plus, you know, 2.5 billion bushels, 3 billion bushels of corn. That means it's oversupplied. The market has one job and one job only in a free market society or free market economy. If it's oversupplied and it thinks there's too much of a surplus, its job is to seek out and find the highest cost producer and rip their face off and make them cry. I'm talking make them cry to the point they get out of the business. Look what's happening in crude oil. I mean, the Saudis and Russia, they can say they're in a little bit of a pissing match, but they might just secretively, I shouldn't even say secretively, they may enjoy prices being down here, you know, at zero or $5, because they know that the market, as it deems it's oversupplied and they pump more oil and make it more oversupplied, it's going to try and find and seek out and destroy the highest cost producers. And if Russia and the Saudis think they're the lowest cost producer longer term, well, the turrets turn here to the U.S., and now it's going to shake out our producers. Same thing we're seeing happen in wheat. Same thing we're seeing possibly happen to some guys in corn. There's guys sitting out there with plus $4 break-evens in corn, $4.50 break-evens in corn. Now, I'm not going to sit and argue and debate about what they have cooked into the numbers, living expense-wise or otherwise, or price of the ground. It's not even debatable. But all I'm telling you is this. Market deems were oversupplied. It puts on the laser. And it looks to find who the highest cost producer is in a commoditized market. So if we're talking number two yellow corn, number two yellow corn is the same here as it is in Nebraska, the same as it is in Illinois, same as it is in Iowa, the same as the Dakotas. Also, pretty much the same as it is in Ukraine, same as it is in Kazakhstan, same as it is in Argentina, Brazil. So all of a sudden, market red light goes on. We're oversupplied. The market starts to get the laser out. Starts to put a red dot on people's heads who are the highest cost producer. Now, you got a tough, here's the fork in the road. You got to figure out, This is your job, not my job, not anyone else. Don't rely on anyone else. You have to sit down with your wife and your kids and your family, and you have to decide, can we compete as a low-cost producer in a commoditized crop? That's your question. Can you compete as a low-cost producer in a commoditized crop? Can you go out and win that space? Can you beat most of the people around you? Can you beat people in Ukraine, Brazil, Argentina? Can you beat those people growing number two young corn? And you know what? I bet there's a ton of people here in the United States that can't. Because we got better ground, we got better soil, we got better technology. Right now, we've got better access to it, we're smarter, and I think we are definitely harder workers. So I think we can win it, but some farmers, there's no way. I mean, you know, if you own your ground outright, here, let me just give you an example. You own your ground, let's say here's a farmer. He owns 3,000 acres all but outright, has no big payments on any equipment, works on his own equipment, in fact. Well, shit, his break-evens are way cheaper, and he definitely can win that game of being a low-cost producer. Now he's going against the younger, you know, put his balance sheet up against the younger kid that's just getting in the business. He has to go out and rent or buy most of his ground with a pretty healthy note on it, has to buy or lease new equipment with a healthy note on it. Well, hell, he's got no chance of competing as a low-cost producer in number two yellow corn. Make sure you understand there's a massive difference between being competitive and being efficient. The young kid could be way more efficient than the good old boy over here that's got all his ground paid for and works on his own equipment. But this guy is way more competitive than the kid with all the technology. And the competitive is going to win. So make sure you challenge yourself and think about that constantly. You have to be competitive. And you have to be competitive with people around the globe now. Not just your neighbors down the street. I mean, you got to be competitive because we're in a global export business with most of these bigger commodities. And I'm talking mostly wheat, corn, traditional corn, beans, things like that. So you're sitting here as a business owner, and all of a sudden you say, hey, I'm listening to hear what Kevin's saying. We got a couple of tough decisions to make. The first decision is, A, can we compete as a low-cost producer and continue to farm what we're farming in a traditional manner? And just get better and better at that. Take small steps to reducing cost. Just look at everything. I mean, really analyze your numbers. Just see where you can start, you know, moving things. Maybe you bring on technology that's going to help you outproduce it. And you're going to produce more bushels, even though the bushels are at a lower price. That's the other thing I need to point out. Make sure you understand this. I always tell the kids, you're going into a business, the kids always come to me with harebrained ideas to start this business, that business. And the sad part is I've probably done most of them and failed at three quarters of them. So know what race you're putting your dog in. And what you have to sit here today and say is, for most all of us, we've got our dog in the race for higher yields and lower prices. Make sure you understand that. The race you're in is higher yields and lower prices. You see what's happened in crude oil. You can see what's happened in other areas. Look at what's happened, price of TVs. I tell everyone, 65-inch TVs, $450 out there delivered to your doorstep. You know, 2-3 years ago, to have a 65-inch flat screen, it cost you $5,000-$6,000. I mean, you were the big baller on the block, so to speak. So I sit there and make sure you understand, it's lower prices, not higher prices. Could you get the $6 corn one day again? Oh, yeah, sure, on a blip of a crazy weather anomaly that hits both South America and the U.S. Definitely you could. Sure, why not? But the overall game is probably corn prices drift lower, but production increases globally. We get better at producing higher yields globally. And that's what technology does. Just remember, technology is insanely deflationary. All your global banks across the entire world the last few years have been fighting deflation, not inflation. And it's because, in our opinion, that there's a massive wave of technology coming on, and that creates a deflationary type environment. Cheaper prices, higher productivity, and higher production. So, like I said, we sit here and we have this tough decision. Can we be open-minded and receptive enough to maybe break some of the chain that we have in place. Maybe we have to change where we market and deliver to. Maybe we have to change some of our current relationships. We're paying too much juice. Maybe we have to change, I don't know what the hell you have to change. Maybe you have to change, back off the new equipment every year. Maybe you have to change and, you know, go to free up cash flow and do bring in people that are going to do more custom farming. Maybe you have to add a supply or a new revenue channel to do more custom farming. I don't know. I don't have those answers for everyone. I'm trying to figure it out myself. What do you have to do to become more competitive as a low-cost producer? That is decision A, okay? This is the fork in the road. You can go left and become more of a low-cost producer, let's say. That's important. And if you choose that path, that makes a ton of sense to me. I love it. I think you can do it. You can build a business plan around it, and you can sit and say to yourself, hey, for us to survive and us to look out as a longer-term investor, we have to work to becoming not efficient. We have to work to becoming wildly competitive in a globalized commodity. And you have to understand and know that you have to be open and really receptive to new technology, because you have to work to up your production because you know lower prices are going to come. Remember, your dog is in a race for higher yields and lower prices. That's that path, and that's what you have to choose. If that's your choice, that's what you need to make sure you focus on. Higher production because you know the lower prices for the bushels are going to be coming your way. The other way you can make the decision is you're going to have to become more, what I think is more consumer-centric. For years past, I've thought about this a ton. In the past, we used to just grow whatever we wanted to grow on the farm, and that's what the consumer had to pick from. Period. End of story. I mean, we grew this, they got to pick from this. That's what your choices in life. You know, there was only one newspaper ever in Kansas, Kansas City Star, basically. I mean, you didn't get choices. I mean, you didn't get to go online if you pick any news source. Yeah, you can get to see, oh, you want to hear Fox, and then you want to hear MSNBC, you want to hear CNBC, you want to hear this, you want to hear. No. None of that existed. You got what you got. What was produced is what you got to pick from. Now, all of a sudden, shit, it's the consumer is going to dictate what they want, and then we're going to have to grow that. And we're seeing that play out everywhere. And I know we don't like it and we hate it and we can't understand it. And some of our parents and grandparents definitely can't understand it. You know, the non-GMO, the all organic, the fake meat, this, that, the other. Well, I don't know what to tell you. I'm letting you know that's how it's going to go down. The consumer is going to drive the next wave of demand here. I laugh. I tell the kids, I said, everything's been flipped upside down. I said, it's kind of funny, and I don't try and buck it. I try and understand it so I can make money as an investor. I tell them, Mom and I used to go to concerts all the time, and I said, hell, the concerts were cheap as hell. Some of them, a lot of them were free to get in, and, you know, you could get a beer for a buck and grab something to eat there, and it was just a good time, buy a T-shirt, 10, 20 bucks, and, hell, we had a lot of fun at the concerts. And then, you know, you would go to the record stores and or the cassette, you know, try and buy a cassette tape or an 8-track or a record, and, you know, they charge 12, 15, 20 bucks for it, right? Well, nowadays, the music's free, you know, so you're getting the music free off Spotify or Apple Music, basically, and they charge you an arm and a leg to go to this concert, and $20 for a beer, and they, you know, go nuts on the T-shirt or something. So, I mean, just everything's flip-flop, and that's kind of how it is now. You look at most business models, they've kind of flipped them, and you know, I think it's similar here in the ag space. Like I said, we used to grow what we grew on the farms, and the consumer had to pick from that. Now it's the consumer wants this, and little Johnny needs to have, you know, his Tom Turkey at Thanksgiving, you know, fed all natural, organic. And I could go through the entire list. Like I said, my dad, my grandfather wouldn't have understood it for sure if he were still here. My dad definitely doesn't. I mean, you know, he can't get his head around, like I said, going to Starbucks paying $8-$10 for a coffee, or going to Chipotle and paying $8-$10 for a burrito. You know, I mean, there was cheaper options. It's like, why the hell would you need that? Okay, I got that. But now here we are in the business, and we've come to this fork in the road, and here we are as producers. Well, I can't compete as a low-cost producer, and I'm out here just growing regular corn and beans. Where do I fit in? Well, you don't. We don't fit in. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I'm thinking this through like crazy. It's like, no, you got to either go to the fork here and become the low-cost producer, or you got to take the other path, and that is you got to become super smart, and you got to start to really understand what the consumer demand is, and you're going to need to go direct to the end user. You're going to need to grow beans for Chipotle. You're going to need to grow specialty crops for Whole Foods. You're going to need to raise meat that's going to be delivered direct to higher-end restaurant chains, and you're going to let them buy direct from you with the choice cuts. You're going to do things that go direct to an end user that's going to fulfill their specified demand. And I understand, and I know that I've talked to a lot of people, and this pisses guys off. They don't want to be sharecroppers. They're like, we're not just going to grow what someone tells us to grow. We're just out here sharecropping. Okay, well, then don't. Then go the other direction and be low-cost producer and go nuts. But I'm letting you know it's one or it's the other. You have to try and win the low-cost game, or you're going to have to become really good and try and work with and have a sales team that can work with the buyers or the direct end users, or turret, you know, shift and change and pivot the turret a little bit so that you can grow what the consumer is demanding, and that you can be open-minded enough to make those shifts and changes. And that'll be an ever-evolving thing, I suspect. I don't think you're just going to be able to say, oh, we're going to toss this dart out here, and now all of a sudden we're just going to grow hemp, and that's all we're going to grow for the next 50 years. I'm not sure that's how that's going to go down. I think you take that path, you know, that's going to be a path where you're a person who's open to change, open to looking at new things, open to understanding consumer demand, how it's shifting, how it's changing. You're going to have the tools and the team assembled. You're going to have younger people on your team that are going to keep you ahead of that curve. And you're going to be able to make that move, and tell you, you're probably going to capture massive premiums in that space, because you'll be one of the more astute, or like I said, one of the more ahead of the curve, so to speak. So to me, those are your two choices. I think it's, you know, try and work harder and look at every step that you take. And I tell the kids this and my other friends when I'm on a board or at some of the businesses. I mean, every step you make as a business owner, it's business. It isn't friendship, it isn't this, that, it's business. And every step needs to be tactical and strategical. And there has to be a reason and a rhyme and a reason and for each move. And that's what I'm trying to say. It isn't that you take these massive, huge moves. It's like the movie, Any Given Sunday. You know, it's inches, and those inches add up to miles. So if you're going to be low-cost producer, you start to take baby steps, and you start to make things happen that are going to lower your cost. And eventually you end up out there 20, 30 years from now, when you leave it to the kids or their kids, they're like, man, my old man and my mom and dad, they had a plan. And they had a really good plan and a really good vision. And they took those steps along that plan, and here's where we're at today. And, you know, and that has to be how it is. And just like the other way I said, you sit there and you say, you know, we can't probably win as a low-cost producer 30 years from now, 20 years from now. Farms are just going to get bigger. Things are going to happen. But maybe we can win that specialty area. You know, our farms are a little bit closer to urban areas today. Our farms have these pluses going for it. And we've got a bigger family with some younger kids in the mix who will help lead us on the consumer demand side and help educate us and teach us things that we can listen to them on it and make decisions together as a family to go down that path. And like I said, you start to just take small steps. What can I do to, you know, improve the soil this year? And can I continue to build on those? And can we build a profile, soil profile, that, you know, consumer demand is really going to want? And are we putting on the right things on our crop that's going to demand a premium and not get us a penalty? Are we planting a type of seed? Are we planting something that's really going to get us that premium? And it's going to have a story behind it. And that's really what you're trying to build. You're trying to build your farm to have a story if you take that path. You want to have a story that you can sell, and it's your kids, and it's your brand, and it's your what you do that's different than other people, what you do that take extra care. That's what you're building. On the other side, like I said, you're trying to be a low-cost producer. You're trying to cut and make and compete as that lower-cost player. So, you know, I've thought this out for so long, and I've thought, man, this is where I've missed the boat. This is where a lot of people miss the boat. I have my trader goggles on all the time, it seems like. What's most important to me and what's most important to my friends and everyone that I usually come in contact with, it's our family. Leaving the farm in a better place is a legacy play. Our kids and their kids, and that's the mentality of a really good investor. And so you got to be right longer term. And like I said, I think we're at a point right now, really, where we really have, you know, the tough decision on our hands. We can bury our head in the sand here, but then our kids are going to have one hell of a tough decision. So, you know, you got to circle the wagons here. Think about things that are happening with your farm. Only you know those things, with your family, with your marriage, with your kids and their husbands and wives, and all those dynamics that have to come into play. And, you know, and really challenge yourself. Where will you be, and how can you be right, or at least in the vicinity, 20 to 30 years from now? And how do you see the entire game playing out for agriculture? To me, I think here in the United States, I just said, I think there's only two ways you go. You either go and you do battle as a low-cost producer of general commodities that will always be around, corn, beans, wheat, cotton, those things, and you try and win that space. And you're probably going to try and get bigger, and you're probably going to try and flex the muscles more and outproduce everyone and have the highest yields possible. Or you're going to have to take the other path, and the other path is provide specialty crops for the world, things that consumers – are maybe going to be fickle about, change a few times here and there. They're going to, you know, they're going to want certain things, certain items, the non-GMOs, this organic. Maybe that fad changes and they switch back. I don't know. You're going to have to be open to that route, though. And like I said, that's a little different route. That's going to involve, you know, finding some of your own direct line, direct types of way to sell to end users, and make those margins juicier or improved. So in closing, I'm just going to say I've decided, I shouldn't say I have, but as a family, we've decided to launch our new business. It's called Van Trump Ag Solutions. And I've been apprehensive to do this for years and years, but I finally come to the conclusion it is none of this is going to happen. And none of my farmer friends are going to get the help they need. Plus, I can pull this off and build this platform. What we're trying to do on our end is really just bring new innovative technologies and new low-cost tools to the farm gate. So I don't care if you choose to become a low-cost producer. We want to bring items that we believe we can save you a substantial amount on to the farm gate from outside the traditional channel. Or if you're pivoting and wanting to become more green or want to become more consumer driven, we would like to bring new and innovative technologies that we think can help you get there faster and more inexpensively, so you can be a lot more competitive. We want to bring you those tools. What we've seen happen is this. You guys know I was an early investor in iSelect, one of my good friends, Carter Williams, and they do a lot of early startup funding for new innovative ag technologies. And I'm on the committee, you know, selection committee and things of that nature. A couple of years ago, we first tried to help our friends at Holganics, Barrett, his family, with Holganics. And they were in the turf side, and they were trying to get into the ag side. And I said, hey, I got a lot of friends in ag. I can maybe help you get it on some acres, try it out, see what the hell it does. And, you know, you guys can go from there. Well, that model proved really successful. And we had a lot of people step up that wanted to try it, see what they thought. They did. We had a great I should say we had a great response. There were some areas where we didn't see as good a results. I'll just be honest with you. I mean, three or four of my friends that are great producers and did some great test trials, they didn't see it. They came back and said, shit, we really didn't see nothing. But I'd say 85, 90% of most of the areas saw just really awesome results, and they love it. And it allowed us to get in through the farm gate and to get products direct to the farmer without paying a lot of the big juice that we were seeing otherwise. So I had no idea of this, and you guys get a kick out of this. Maybe you get a kick, maybe you won't. Maybe somebody be pissed that I'm saying something. But I had no idea until I had invested with Iselec in a lot of these ag tech startups. It's really almost next to impossible to get some really good innovation that may be out there actually onto the farm and in through the farm gate, meaning for you and I to see it on our farms. What happens is this, and that shit, I had no clue this went on. I guess I'm oblivious to this type of stuff. But your big hitters and your big players basically control the farm gate. We don't need to mention names and throw anyone under the bus. But I think you guys will appreciate this. I never took advertising money early on from any of the, and even to this day. But we don't take, I don't care if John Deere, Case, I don't care who it is, Syngenta, if they wanted to advertise, they wanted to, we have not taken any of their money ever when they've approached us. Because I did not want to have to worry about what I wrote or if I was going to piss someone off or if I was going to say something or write something and then jeopardize all of my advertising dollars, which is what I see in this whole industry. It's, you know, hell, half the stuff you read is like a advertorial or something. I mean, because they're being sponsored by some huge company. Well, I never wanted to go down that path. Nothing against the big companies. I got friends at all of them. Nothing against that at all. I just wanted to be able to say and do what I wanted to do and not have to worry that I was I wasn't acting the way I was supposed to act or wasn't saying the things I was supposed to say for these big corporations. So here we sit in this position. We have no brand loyalty. I mean, we didn't do anything here. We haven't taken any money from anyone. But a lot of the bigger companies, they have like loyalty contracts in place. And all it means is this. So you own some huge ag retail operation and you buy XYZ product. And they say, hey, we'll give you an extra point or two if you sign this contract that you'll stay 95% loyal to XYZ. Well, hell, who isn't going to do that? I'm not dogging anyone. I mean, I think it's a great move on both parties' parts. You know, the big companies getting loyalty agreements in place, and the other ag retailer, hell, well, he's going to sign to stay loyal because he's getting the extra bump. Well, the problem with that is, let's say I'm an innovator. I'm Innovator Joe out here. I've come up with a cool new product, a cool new thing that will really work on the farm. I go to anybody and I say, hey, can you introduce this to your customers or your farmers? Well, not really. I mean, unless you're going to give me 10, 20 million, you know, you're going to, if unless this person's going to, like the old days in the radio business, you know, hell, if you wanted a song played, a hit single, you had to go out and pay the piper. I mean, you had to pay to get on the radio station. You know, it wasn't just, hey, here's a really cool song we heard. We're going to play it for these. No, that's not how it worked. You had to pay to play. Well, I'm letting you know that's kind of how things are. It's just if there's some new really cool innovation or something new and great that could help all of us, it may never get to all of us because everyone has all these loyalty things in place and contracts. Well, you just can't do it. And it's no one's fault. I mean, who in the hell are you going to blame here? I mean, oh, the big ag tech people? Well, hell, they've got tons of R&D money. They've spent fortunes to come up with these new things that they come up with. Well, of course they're going to want loyalty contracts. I'm not blaming them. I'm not blaming the ag retailer either. I'm just saying it's a unfortunate part of the channel, you know, that There's only basically a few lanes in and out of the farm gate. Well, I'm just simply wanting to come over and build a platform that is a way in the farm gate through our report and through our network of people, where if someone comes up with something cool, or we see it through iSelect or through AgFund or any of the other ag tech startups, hey, we can put out a thing that says, if you'd like to be a part of a trial, if you'd like to test this out, if this is something that's in your wheelhouse or may work for you in your area or the way you're running your business model, we'd like to show it to you, and you can see for yourself if it's something that you want to move forward with. That's it. Same on the low-cost provider side. All we're saying is this. Hey, if it's a product that you've used for years, or it's something that's off patent, or it's something that, hell, is available 30 to 50% cheaper, and you can buy it, and that's something that helps you move to become better as a low-cost producer and help save rural America, or help save a family on the farm, well, bet your ass I want to be able to bring it to you and show it to you. And if someone's going to get pissed and mad that we're bringing that as a platform, I got nothing. I mean, I guess bring it. I don't know what else to tell folks. So that's what we're going to try and do with Van Trump Ag Solution. I'm going to try and bring in standardized, products that we've used in the past or use on a daily basis and go direct. Just straight from wherever the hell they be manufactured, straight into the farm gate. And like I said, I think we can shave some cases 20, 30, even maybe 40%, 50% off of some of the prices that are currently just cooked into the channel. Now, on the other side of it, I'm hoping we can bring in new innovation and new technology. As we see it, we'll do our due diligence with Carter and his team and the other guys. We're not just going to bring in any knucklehead thing that's out there. But I'm saying if it's been tested, we like the validity of it, we like the founders, we like the science behind it, we like some of the things that it offers, we'd like to be able to, we'll just run a story about it, or we'll send it out, shoot it out to email to everyone. You guys can decide on your own. So that's why I'm seeing it as a win-win for everyone. Like I said, anytime I feel like I can set up a business, I can be a part of a business, it's a win-win-win for everybody involved. I love to be a part of that. And in this case, I think we have that. Like I said, we're not looking to upset any apple carts or anything that may currently be in place. I just think it's time. We're watching rural America fall apart by the wayside every time I go to a new town or a new town square. Wherever it may be, it shouldn't say a new one, an old one. It's sad. It's sad to see what's happened in rural America. It's sad to see the jobs that we're losing. It's sad to see a lot of the things. I know, and I've been in many, many conversations with lots of great leaders and people that are trying to figure out and rack their brain, how can we help revive rural America? How can we help? Well, I'm letting you know, technology's coming on regardless, and it's bringing transparency. So the good old boy network is probably going to tumble a little bit. And you're going to see, you're going to see people have to make some difficult choices and decisions. And if it's the best for you and your family to try and become low-cost producers, you're going to have to make some decisions, and tough decisions, to take you in that direction. If you're going to try and go direct more to the consumer, you're going to have to make some tough decisions there as well. You may have to call some people and say, hey, we're not delivering to you anymore. We're going direct to this person. I don't know how it's going to shake out. All I'm telling you is this. If we keep doing the same thing we're doing and expecting different results, well, then who's insane? I mean, we're insane. Definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. Now, come on. We can do better than this, I promise. And I'm telling you, I don't have the answer for your individual farms. I've laid out some of the broader pieces. I mean, I've probably done a little bit of nothing except hopefully give you a nudge to make you think. That's it. That's all. And like I said, I wanted to give you these tools to think about things. I don't care if you do any business with us or you want to pass this on to people that don't even like us. I could care less. I want to try and help. Like I said, I'd like to believe that our kids and our grandkids and their grandkids are going to enjoy the same types of benefits and things we did when we grew up in rural America. So that's really all I'm hoping to add here through this conversation. I wanted to let you know we will be rolling out some press stuff and things on our new platform to try and help some of these ag innovators and try and see if we can help some of our American farm families reduce some of their costs and expenses and become more competitive. Hell, that's what we're all trying to do, is become more competitive. And we have to if we're going to stay alive and survive in this new environment with technology coming on like this. So, like I said, we've got our dog in a race for higher yields and lower prices. And, you know, we're going to do everything on our side of the fence to help folks challenge themselves to think this through. Try and be right, like I said, long term. I certainly don't have any magic wand or just $1 million, $1 billion answers over here. But I can pass along the things that are keeping me up at night and the things that my wife and I sit around and contemplate and talk about. And like I said, I've been super lucky to be around a lot of smart people who have challenged my thoughts. And I hope that I challenge yours today. And it's kind of a long-winded piece, but hell, I figured I might as well get it out to everyone and let everybody chew on it. And we'll be out there in the planters and it'll be coming around to harvest time soon. Maybe you could rethink about it. So hope that helps everyone and hope it helps your family longer term. Like I said, I think it's the one common thread that holds us, that is our one similarity across all rural America. I mean, we worked this hard and did all this for our kids and their kids, and we hope that one day those decisions and hard work pay some dividends to them. So if our family can be of any help, like I said, if there's any questions anyone ever has, you know, shoot us an email, give us a call at the office, and we'll be happy to help. I hope everybody has a good one. Talk to you soon. Bye.